March 18th meeting of Audit Committee to order. Can I have approval of the February 18th meeting minutes?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
So carried. All right, purpose of this meeting is to be presented the salary study that was performed by Baker Tilly. This was as a result of Resolution 26 of 2022, requires to be done once every 4 years. This began in September of 23. We have Jada from Baker Tilly, and I'll turn it over to you.
All right, thank you. Can everyone hear me?
I think so.
Good.
Yes.
Okay, good. Perfect. All right, I will share my screen. Okay. I think we're good to go. All right, and I believe you all have this presentation as well, so I'm happy to answer any questions along the way. All good?
Jada, will you please try speaking?
Jada, do you want to try that? Jay, do you want to try now? Testing? No. Jada. She either frozen or can't hear us. No? Jada.
Hello? Hello, can you hear us?
Do that purpose.
Hello? 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 Hello, Jada.
She should be able to hear us. I'm going to have to log out and log back in.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Can you still hear us? Hello? Hello?
Hey, Don.
I can hear you, but she can't hear us. Hello, hello? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. Okay, bye. All right. Can everyone still hear me and we're good to get started?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, it looks like everyone has this presentation in hand. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those along the way, or if you want to hold them to the end, either way. My screen. But I'm going to walk through what our process looks like in terms of at what points we collected what data, how we analyzed it, how we compiled it, what kind of conclusions we drew based on those results. There we go. Okay, if you recall from when we kicked off the project initially, we have a five-phase process. These five phases are shown here. Starting with a data collection phase where we were meeting with the county's project team to understand what is your current situation, what do your pay plans look like, how do they work, how are they updated, what data is used to update those, how do employees move through those ranges. Also wanting to understand what are your goals for conducting the study, what challenges might exist in conducting the study, but also largely communication meetings. So we came on site. If you recall, we met with employees and department heads and even union reps to discuss the project, to answer questions, and then talk about the position analysis questionnaire that we asked everyone to complete. And so those PAQs were very foundational to our process, where employees were telling us in their own words what work was actually and currently being performed in their role. And because those PAQs were so important to our process, there was a built-in supervisor review so that we were making sure to get complete and accurate information on all positions. So once we had those PAQs, we got into a review of positions from an internal standpoint, looking at internal equity using our job evaluation tool. And then from an external standpoint, conducting a custom market survey to collect base pay information. And so then taking that internal and external data and kind of rolling it together with the pay plan development phase, which is largely what we're going to be presenting here today. And then finally, in the final phase, just kind of documenting the process and getting ready to hand everything over for you all. So I want to dig into some of these middle phases a little bit more, because they are the heavy lift of the project in terms of collecting data, analyzing data, and letting those results kind of drive the rest of the process. So from the internal review standpoint, the point of this process is to establish internal equity. And so we used those PAQs. We also used existing job descriptions, maybe where we didn't have PAQs or couldn't understand what the PAQs were trying to tell us. But the end result of this phase is a total score for every job. And we get there by using these 9 compensable factors that you see listed here in the box to measure all the positions. And it really does work like a measuring stick to establish that internal value. And so we're attempting to establish a hierarchy of positions based on the education, the experience, the level of work. And this is a measurement of the position, work performed in the position, not the person in the position. Because if you've got employees who've been in their roles for a very long time, they probably have way more experience and maybe even more education than is required. But so we're measuring the position in terms of minimum qualifications to be in this role. What's the level of work performed and the human relations, et cetera. And so using this tool to establish that magic number for each position is how we ultimately establish that hierarchy based on the internal value. So this is a comparison of positions against every other position within the county, versus the market is a comparison of positions to other similar positions external to the county. So with this data, we'll come back to it when we get to the pay plan development phase, but it is a very important data point. And I say that because it's meant to balance the market. The market is what the market is, right? It is, you know, you've got hot jobs, you've got jobs that are pretty status quo that, you know, you can do just a general increase or cost of labor adjustment for the beginning and the end of time, and they'll always be fine. And then you've got some jobs that are going to move a lot faster in the market than others. But ultimately, the market, you know, there's not necessarily a balancing act within the market. So this is meant to kind of counterbalance what you see in the market. Now, with the market, we had these 14 organizations identified with the county to be included in the survey to collect those base pay ranges. 1 through 14 represent the public sector peers. And then we also represented the private sector with these last 4 surveys. You see Comp Analyst, Economic Research Institute, and Pay Factors are subscriptions that we have to collect that published data. Bureau of Labor Statistics is free data online. We were able to get data for about 9 of these public organizations you see bolded here. And then, of course, we had access to the data that we subscribed to. But getting into more of our survey approach, I mentioned those published surveys. And so I want to talk about that a little bit, because when we're pulling data from those public peers, we're asking for a pay range, the full minimum to maximum. When we're pulling the data from these published sources, they're offering data at the 10th and the 90th percentile, and so that ultimately becomes the minimum and the maximum for our data point kind of reconciliation. Some adjustments that we did make to the data once we compiled it, differences for work week. For an example, a 37.5 work week versus a 40-hour work week, just making sure we're being careful to plug in the correct hourly to get the correct annual. And for the purposes of this project, the county has many different pay plans with varying annual hours, and so did some of the peers. And so to put things all in a common point in time, all of the data adjusted to a 2080 schedule, so a 40-hour work week, that includes the county of Ulster. So we adjusted y'all's data and the market data to a common point of 2080 annual hours. Now, if the data we obtained was not for the current fiscal year that we're pulling data, we would age it forward just to make sure it was reflective of that current year. Usually just the Bureau of Labor Statistics is where this applies because they're about a year behind. And then we also did adjustments for geography based on cost of labor. So I'll get into that one a little bit more on this next slide. So cost of labor is not the same as cost of living. It is measuring the pace that wages are moving in a given geography. So in certain geographies, it may not be moving as quickly because there's just not as much competition. They don't have to, versus some localities where you do have lots of competition, the wages might be moving a little bit quicker. So up here, you'll see that we have this cost of labor figure for Kingston, and then we have that figure for each of the localities where we pulled data down in that ERI indicator column. And then the far column is going to be the amount that we adjusted data by for each of those organizations. So Albany, for an example, 101.5 compared to Kingston being 105.2. And this is on a scale out of 100, with 100 being the U.S. average. So we're taking the distance from what the peers are to where you are. So for Albany, we ended up adjusting their data up 3.7% because it seems like the cost of labor is moving a little bit quicker. So we have to bring them up to meet you, versus in Poughkeepsie, moving a little bit faster, so we have to bring it down 9.5% just to kind of make that apples to apples comparison of the pace of wages. So this data, we pulled this from the Economic Research Institute. They have a geographic assessor tool that is updated quarterly. This data was pulled from last summer around June, all of the data, including these figures that we applied adjustments from. Now, getting into some of the results, I mentioned that we requested full pay ranges. So this is part of the quality control for our calculations purposes. We ask for the full pay range, then we calculate for the midpoint, and then we take an average of those midpoints to be able to determine that market value. We are looking in terms of what is a match, a quote unquote good match, is a 75% overlap in those duties and responsibilities. So whether the organizations provided those matches or we match them ourselves, we're just making sure we're not simply looking at titles and calling it a good match. We are trying to make sure we understand that these are enough of an overlap in the duties and responsibilities to call it a good match in the first place. And then from there, there's also a quantity aspect. We do require at least 3 matches per benchmark position to be able to calculate that market value. So insufficient data is going to be reflected as so, and that's going to be any position where we have less than 3 matches and couldn't calculate that market value. So where we did have 3 matches or more, for those benchmarks, on average, we had about a little more than 5 matches on each. So pretty good for the ones where we did have enough data. For those positions where there was not enough data or that we didn't survey the positions to begin with, what we do have for all positions is the internal equity. We have a job evaluation score for 100% of the positions in the process. So, you know, where we don't have market data for all of them, that's not quite necessary. We do know the hierarchy based on internal equity. This market data just helps us set that hierarchy into the pay structures. So in total, about 424 positions were included in the survey as benchmark positions, where we requested those full pay ranges. About 98 positions had insufficient data, so overall ended up with market values for about 76% of those titles that we surveyed. Okay, so we've got the internal equity, we've got the external equity, we've got all this data. Talking about what can we do with this information? Pay plan-wise, what do your current pay plans look like? What do you want them to look like? How are they working? How are they not working? So considering your current situation, looking at all of the different pay plans, and there's a lot of them because you have collective bargaining and about a pay plan for each one of those contracts. And then on top of that, another pay plan if you've got a different set of annual hours. So looking at all of these different pay plans, trying to understand where is there some overlap, where is there some pretty stark, differences, and ultimately finding, even though there is so many different pay plans, not within all of them, here's even more, there is a lot of similarities in the sense that there's not very many similarities, right? But we are covering the same ground. So multiple pay plans, lots of positions assigned in all different buckets of pay plans. The inconsistencies from a parameter standpoint, and by that I mean how many grades, how many steps, what's the distance between steps, the distance between grades, all of those things, there's no trend. So midpoint differential, that's going to be the distance between each grade at the midpoint. And this is going to be the distance between minimum and maximum. So there's no identifiable trend, even if I go back here and you can kind of see these numbers where these grades are about 1.6% apart. All the way up here, we've got 6.8%. We've got some that are 5, some that are 20. You know, these grades are just varying different distances apart. The range spreads are, you know, some of them are ranging from 12 all the way up to 40% of the spread. These are closer together, around 20%. So it looks like you've got a lot of pay plans that are all doing a lot of different things, but I wanted to try to understand better what are the pay plans doing. So pulling a sample of a couple of these pay plans to look across all of the steps, and just kind of seeing, well, actually, these pay plans are doing the same thing in terms of they're obviously going in the same direction. Pay increases as you go through the pay plan. This is only a sample because not every pay plan has the same amount of steps and to be able to compare. So then I said, let's look at the lowest low, whether you have 2 steps, 3 steps, or 12. We'll look at all of the minimums. We'll look at all of the maximums and just see what ground is being covered by all of these different pay plans. And there's a lot of overlap. For the most part, it seems like if you find get a pay plan that's kind of starting low enough and ending high enough, you could cover the same ground. And so this was my goal in trying to understand what ground are we covering, because it seems like with all of these pay plans, we can definitely consolidate, have a lot fewer pay plans. The benefit of having fewer pay plans is for HR, it's a lot less administration, but for the employees, there's a lot more transparency in terms of understanding what is the situation, how is my pay defined, how do I move through the pay range. And if you think of employees who, coming over here back to these pay plans where you've got two grades that are pretty similar, I'll just pick two random, this grade 15 over here is starts at an 87, we've got a starts at an 86, and we've got a starts at an 89. So picking positions across all three of these pay plans, and then you say, how did we decide that this position belongs in this grade? How are these employees moving through the ranges? If the distance between each grade, each step is different, then the increases they get every year is different. And for what reason? And for how many steps? For what reason, right? So all of these inconsistencies lead to how the inconsistencies in how employees actually end up getting paid through these pay plans. So the goal was, let's consolidate, let's have fewer variations of the same thing so that employees have a better understanding of how their pay is defined and how it will progress over time. So this is the proposed pay plan. It is a single pay structure meant to be for all of the positions. It is 34 grades, numbered 1 through 34. It has 9 steps, 1 through 9. So the distance between each grade is measured through this midpoint differential. The midpoint being step 5. So looking at the distance here, we've got about 5% between each grade until you get to the very end, and then it jumps up to 10, 10, and 20. And then the distance between each step is also consistent. We've got 3% between each step for nine steps. So any employee assigned to grade 5 versus any employee assigned to grade 17, you can bet that they're going to get this 3% for every time they get a step increase. You know, you just have this more transparency, and that leads to more better morale when employees understand where they stand and where they're going and how to get there. So the idea is to have a framework that is just easy and clear to understand and gives a balance to how employees are fair with their pay. looking at this pay plan from a different perspective as a chart, just to kind of give it a different visual. This shows the stair step where that consistent 5% between each grade and then at the very end where it jumps to a 10 to a 10 and then a 20. And so those, the midpoint differential jumps on those are to accommodate positions assigned to those grades and kind of the market value that was happening for those positions. Looking at it in another perspective, we do run a regression analysis. I emphasize the job evaluation a lot. It is meant to balance the market, and this is how we do that balance. So along the bottom here is demonstrating the job evaluation scores, and along the left side is going to be this market average midpoint. So each dot is where those two data points intersect. So if we're just picking randomly a dot, this dot is pretty close, if I come straight down, pretty close, maybe 380 points. And if I go straight across, I don't know, maybe about 70,000, 80 almost. And so each of these dots is where those two points are going to correlate. And then you've got this black line demonstrating the line of best fit, the regression line through all of the dots. So up here, our R-squared is pretty high, it's 92%. That means there's a correlation between these data points. A manager is a manager. And that's not always the case. Sometimes we'll have dots floating in space, either way, way high above or way below. And that means if it's floating over here, the job evaluation score is very high and the market data is very low. And so ultimately, we like this regression because we want to go make sure we've got the right data, first of all. Why is the market so low and why is the job evaluation so high? For some positions, that's just the case. Especially measuring public sector positions against the market, which is very private sector leaning, some positions just the market does not care. And the job evaluation is a good way to counterbalance that. The opposite is also true, where you can have really high market data, but from an internal equity standpoint, that's just not how this organization uses that position. So we kind of have this job evaluation to pull it back to reality and take that market data with a grain of salt. So it is meant to balance it. These other lines, the coral lines that you see here, are the proposed pay plan. So this dark line is the midpoint, the proposed midpoint, and you can see it just runs parallel with this midpoint, this market line, and then these other dotted lines represent the minimum and the maximum. And so, again, using this regression to help us understand, does it make sense to have all positions in a single pay plan? Can it work? Well, we've got the pay plan is showing the natural distribution of your jobs and that we've built a pay plan that can kind of frame that. So we've got the pay plan structure, talking about how do we get positions assigned to this new pay plan. You can see the number of positions kind of across all 34 grades. Some of these have some natural peaks and valleys where you've got a lot of positions in grade 5 and then it kind of falls down to only 8 positions in grade 6. But overall, there is this kind of bell curve that's happening where you do have that middle section swelling and then it kind of tapers off. So the information that we use to figure out which positions belong in which of these 34 grades is all of the data we compile, the job evaluation scores, the market average midpoint. We even consider current midpoints. Those are important too, because especially where the market says, you know, this the market's just not there for this position. We don't want to place the position lower than where it is. So we want to also keep in mind what is the current midpoint so that we're not arbitrarily placing positions lower than where they already are. Career progressions is a big one to make sure you've got that separation. Maybe you have a 1-2 senior, a 1-2 lead, making sure you've got enough built-in progression there, as well as the supervisor-subordinate separation. And this is the biggest benefit to having a single pay plan, or at least fewer than you have, is the supervisor-subordinate separation. It's because everything is in one pay plan, and especially where you're talking about the exempt, non-exempt line in the sand. Having so many different pay plans, if they're all moving at a different pace, meaning you're getting a 3% COLA, they're getting a 5%, things are moving at a different pace, they're going to start to overlap, and eventually, for this non-exempt position to move up, it's not worth it. But everything being in one pay plan, there's cohesion, it's easier to keep an eye on those progressions and those separations to make sure that you kind of keep that domino effect an appropriate distance away from each other, and it makes it worth it to keep progressing through the ranks. The information we did not consider in establishing grade assignments is the person, not their performance, their length of service with the organization, or their salary. We did not consider the person at all. So for all 6 of these positions that are assigned to grade 11, I don't know who the employee is. That was not considered at all. It is only the position that we're measuring. So once we had this preliminary information, we did review it with the county's project team. I was on site in November to review with department heads and with union reps. Their feedback was incorporated into the results. We went back for some things that they wanted us to look in on, or, you know, this can't be in the same grade as this, so we would go back and take that into consideration. So up to this point, we have only talked about the position in terms of what is the work performed, what's the value of the work, how do we translate that value into the pay plan. It is to this point with the implementation that we start to talk about the person and what is the existing salary relative to this new pay range that we've defined with this new pay plan, with the grade assignments and so on. So here are a couple of my little disclaimers before we get into some of those calculations. We prepared three different scenarios. These figures represent base pay only. It does not include any of the extras, no overtimes, no differentials, no benefits, no contributions, none of that. It is base pay only. No employee will receive a reduction in pay. It's, you know, kind of our rule of thumb is we don't want to take money away from employees. The best practice and our recommendation is just if there's an employee salary that is above the new maximum, as you can see down here, our recommendation is just to red circle it or freeze it where it is until that pay structure over time catches up. And then most policies allow that once they fall back within the range or at the maximum, they're eligible for those continued increases thereafter. So to that, I'll get into this. Of the 1,426 employees that we included in the calculations, about 202 of them have a salary that falls below their new minimum. So we want to make sure we get these employees at least onto the pay plan. 974, a very big chunk, have a salary that already falls within their proposed pay range. So their salary is somewhere between the minimum and the maximum of the grade that we're proposing. And then there's 249 that have a salary that's above their new maximum. And so those are the ones I'm talking about down here. We don't want to take money away from these employees. We just want to keep them where they are. They'll retain that salary, and we won't place them onto the pay plan. So looking at the first scenario, in this scenario, we're looking at moving employees to step one through nine, the closest step without a decrease to their existing pay. So for these 1,426, we've got about 202 who are below their new minimum. So this movement for them, they would be going to step one. That's the closest step without a decrease. For the 974, they're going to go to some step between one through nine that correlates with their pay without a decrease. And for these 249 employees, they're just going to retain their existing pay. You can see there's no cost here, and they're not going to move to a step. So overall, the implementation for this scenario is about 2.3, almost 2.4 million to adopt, with the big chunk of that coming with just getting these 202 employees at least onto the pay plan, moving them to step one. So walking through how does this actually look from an employee standpoint? What happens to the pay? So I've got some example employees that I draw on. So we've got four different employees who would be assigned to grade five. Starting with Robert, current salary is $45,000. So if I look at the proposed pay plan with grade five, this ranges from about $47,000 all the way up to $60,000. So for Robert's $45,000, we would be looking at the step closest to $45,000 without a decrease. Because he's below the minimum, he would be moving to step one. This would result in an increase of around $2,500. For Jimmy, $50,400 is the salary. So if we look across here, $50,412 would put him in a step three. And that results in about a $12 increase. As opposed to John, whose salary was just a tick above that, $50,500, that would actually be a decrease to put him in grade three, so we're going to go to four. That's the next step without taking money away, and that's about $1,400 of an increase for John. Versus JP, who has a salary that is above the maximum at 62, and we don't want to take money away from that situation, so he will retain his $62,000. He won't be placed on the step. So I have these examples just to demonstrate that for some employees, it's going to look like $2,500. That's not bad. And then for some, it's going to look like $12. But it's just how the math sometimes falls of actually placing those employees onto a step so that it can be adopted. In the next scenario, we're looking at placing employees on a step correlating with their years in position. And so this is meant to help with compression by moving longer tenured employees further into their range. So this is, you know, if you have 3 years in your position, you would move to step three. If your existing salary is already higher than step three, we don't want to take money away, so you would just go on that step that relates to your salary established in option one. So this scenario, about $5 million to adopt, and I'll walk through that same scenario to see how that looks. So for our Robert, who has $45,000, we're going to say he has 2 years. So in the previous scenario, Robert's $45,000 was below minimum, and he was going to go to step one. But with 2 years, Robert goes to step two. So this increase is a little bit more for him. It's about $3,900 because 2 years equals step two. For Jimmy, 3 years equals step three. So $50,400, yep. Jimmy's right where he should be. He would be going to step three anyway. So still same situation, 3 years is step three. John also has 3 years, but step three would be a decrease. So we don't want to take money away. He would go to step four. And then for JP, who has 8 years, again, above the maximum, we're not going to take money away. Okay, and then the last scenario is a different version of scenario two. Where we're moving people through the range relative to their years in position, capped at 5 years. And the reason we cap it at five is because five is the midpoint. Step five is the middle of the pay range, so we're going to move you through your range up to the midpoint. So this option would cost about 3.4. It's not quite as expensive as the second scenario, but it's still able to have that philosophy, but maybe being a little bit more fiscally attainable. So walking through those scenarios, Robert's the same, 2 years, he goes to step two. Now we're saying Jimmy and John both have 7 years. So Jimmy, with his $50,400, if he was going to go 7 years to step seven, that's where he would be, except for this scenario caps it at five. So 53.4, and that is an increase. So that is the step that he would go to, is up to step five. Versus John, moving John to step five would be a decrease in pay. So instead, John would go to step seven, because if this was his pay, he would go to the salary step of correlating. He would go to the step correlating with his current salary rather than getting a decrease. And then same for JP, he's above the max, so we're not taking money away. He's just going to stay floating above that maximum. And then finally, just kind of concluding the presentation and the project, that we're urging the county to consider the use of a single pay structure for all positions, as it stands to have a lot more consistency and transparency for the employees to understand where they stand, where they're going, how their pay is defined, to consider using our job evaluation tool, which has established internal equity for your positions. It's the backbone of the class and comp plan, and it can be used to help maintain the pay plan going forward. We're also urging you to consider the approval of these grade assignments, which we use lots of data to establish from job evaluation, market data, existing midpoints, those career progressions, took lots of input from across the organization to get to this list of grade assignments. Selecting an implementation scenario that's going to help you achieve your compensation philosophy, but also one that's attainable and sustainable fiscally. My biggest recommendation is this last section, though, is to continue efforts like these to maintain your class and comp system. So routinely reviewing and updating your job descriptions, using job evaluation to help you with the internal equity aspect of your grade assignments, adjust your pay structure annually to help keep pace with market, adjust salaries annually to ensure advancement for those employees through their ranges. And then doing all of those things is really just your routine maintenance. So that will help keep the shelf life of your pay plan, where you can probably forego doing a comprehensive review like this and for maybe 5 years. Of course, if you start to see another pandemic or a tremendous amount of movement or reclass requests, there might, you know, or certain categories of jobs that have never been hot jobs before suddenly are, it might be reason to take another look rather than waiting the 5 years. But I'm happy to answer any questions, go back to any slides, especially this implementation. It was a lot of numbers and data to walk through.
All right, Legislator Maloney.
Yes, I have a lot of questions, but let's start with these steps. So we're talking about a lot of this, what I see the second half of this is reliant upon combining these steps. We're talking about different unions are combined, right? So I just don't understand how that would work because you have different negotiations. As soon as you have your first negotiation, you might get 3 years, you might get 2 years, you might get a different percentage. You also have COs and the road patrol that can retire earlier, collect earlier from state retirement system, so it might make sense for them to have more steps. We already had, I think, a 3% management raise that I don't think is represented here, so the scale's already off. I don't see how it's doable to, but the second half of a lot of what I've heard, I don't feel like it's logistically feasible.
So I will say it's certainly not not a forever solution, right? We do understand you have a lot of different groups with different, collective bargaining kind of perspectives. I mean, what the reality of the logistics is that you do a study like this and you put everything together and then over time they move apart again and then you do a study like this and they come together again. But the idea is that the county is defining its compensation philosophy, and that is, what do we believe about how employees should be paid? And that's regardless of what position you're in, what department you're in, what union you're in. This is what we believe about people who work here, how they should be paid, and making this defined playbook. And then what happens with negotiations happens, and then over time you bring it back together again.
It would almost have to be every year, or every 2 years, I would say, that we would have to completely do this whole process again. Did vehicles or fringe benefits come into play? I know vehicles, I think in the RFP, fringe as far as compared to other government, local governments, the comparisons you were doing that we would take into account the premiums, the co-pays, the deductibles mm-hmm. of our county insurance compared to what other like positions were planned up, we're doing, was that taken into account?
Not for this. We are pulling information now, looking at fringe benefits and working with Don and some of the benefits brokers to see what information we can get from a snapshot perspective, but that was not taken into consideration here. This is base pay only.
How about vehicles? Because I am told they are considered pay.
I mean, for the fringe benefit portion, we can make sure we capture that, but this is only looking at those base pay ranges.
That was not given to you, the positions that had take-home vehicles?
We haven't captured that. This is like, that would be beyond base pay, so we haven't looked at that yet.
My last question is for you to, because we kind of, half the presentation was about implementing what you gave us, but this may be a tool, but we may use it as a tool in union negotiations and maybe agree with certain things and disagree with others. So I just want to understand better. I know a lot of us, me in particular, feel that the lowest paid individuals in the county and are probably the most easy to compare to like positions around, and those are our COs. Our own budget analysts in the legislature did an evaluation comparing to, we didn't even compare to the state where we have a lot of state prisons right inside our county. We actually have probably 75% of our county lives closer to the Orange County Jail, Dutchess County Jail, or a state prison, all of which pay quite a bit more than we do. We have, 30, 40 vacancies consistently. We're running an insane amount of overtime, and I don't see the jail, the COs in particular, being marked as underpaid. And that, so I just want to understand your process, because it obviously differed from ours when we did our own internal legislative salary comparison for the COs in our county and came up with a much multi-million dollars just for those positions. So if you could just briefly tell me, because a lot of those things we were talking about earlier in the first couple of pages wouldn't really apply to COs. I mean, COs is unique. We have state prisons here in Ulster County. We have jails above, below, and to the side of us. I would just think it would mostly rely upon comparing to those specific positions. So how did you come up with the CO salary?
So off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you which grade assignment that position is going into, but I can talk through what our process is for the market data collection phase. And it's that we are requesting full pay ranges from these peer, identified peer organizations, including some of those published sources. From the full pay range, the minimum to the maximum, we're taking the midpoint. And then, say for that title or any title, say we had 5 matches, say we had 10 matches. Whatever the average of those midpoints are for however many matches we had becomes the market average midpoint. Now, that number, once we get into the grade assignments, it was one of the factors. It's not the singular factor where, okay, this number is 75,000, it must go into the grade that has a midpoint of 75,000. So if I'm using that round number, it's grade 12. What other factors are taken into consideration is internal equity. What is the hierarchy of positions? If the position it's reporting to also had a market data pretty close to that, we're going to have to either push something down or push something up. It's to fit the dominoes kind of into the proper layout. Also that progression, the supervisor-subordinate separation, as well as those existing midpoints. It was the situation, and it always is, there's always a handful where your current midpoints may be higher than what the market suggests. But we don't want to get in a situation where, well, market says we can pay a lot less. We want to keep them kind of equitable with where they are. So even though market says you can go lower, we're also taking midpoint, current midpoints into consideration to help decide which grade point makes the most sense.
When it comes to POs, market tells us, we're barely staffing our jail. So market tells me we have a problem. Perhaps I'm wondering how much the geographic difference, the minus 9.5 for Dutchess and the minus 8.1 for Orange, could that have come into play with regards to you figuring that in, and that kind of takes away the comparison from, I'm just struggling to find out. I was shocked to not see the jail, several other positions as well that we're not going to have time to get into. I just need to understand how every position around, how we're losing so many COs to the state and to Orange and Dutchess. There, it's such an easy, straightforward comparison. We have so many consistent vacancies, and I wonder if that was ever taken into account. Maybe certain positions in the county, dispatch, COs, where we have 3- and 4-year-long vacancies where we just can't fill these positions.
Yeah.
But they are going other places right around us. I'm just struggling to find out how the salary study did not find them to be underpaid.
So we did not take vacancies into consideration, but looking at what you just pointed out for Orange County, whatever data we collected from Orange County, we did we did shift it down 8.1% and Dutchess 9.5% because the cost of labor in those geographies seems to be moving a lot quicker than it is.
Look,
in Ulster County.
I don't necessarily think that's not something to take into consideration, but when half our county lives closer to the Orange County Jail or the Dutchess County Jail, I don't know how we can just apply that. I think different positions, and I think the COs are one of them, where the jails in this place and these other jails are in other places, and it's a direct comparison to those, the exact same positions, exact same retirement. I don't know how we can treat every position in the county equally with regards to geographical difference as well. But I think we're running out of time, and I'm taking it all up.
Legislator Hansen.
To piggyback off of what Legislator Maloney said, on this benchmark positions, many of these things for corrections and over at the Sheriff's Department, for example, there's a number of lines that have insufficient data. Why would that be? And why, why would that be?
Yeah, if positions had less than 3 matches, we were not able to calculate a market value. And so, asking all of these organizations, what is this pay range? And also, if we did find a match, it had to also be a 75% overlap. So it has to be a good match, and we have to have 3 good matches to calculate that value. So if it has insufficient, we didn't have enough good matches.
Okay, Legislator Hanson. All right, Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. The five municipalities that didn't, I take it that their data is not included because they didn't return information?
Correct.
Do you have any way of estimating that what the impact of the absence of data from those five particular municipalities will do?
I mean, I'm not sure how you want to measure impact, but I will tell you we got to this point where we didn't have their data and started considering, is it worth still asking and begging and pleading? And then there was a lot of, like, borderline harassment trying to get this data. Since they're all towns, knowing that if we even got data for one of those towns, it's only going to return matches on how many positions because of how different towns are with county positions. I mean, we might have gotten like five more matches. And so it became we've got to stop and move on with the data we have because with these towns just not giving up their data, it's not really going to move the needle too much on getting one or two more matches per position.
Thank you. And I'm impressed with your regression line and the way that the data then did spread out on either side of it. I'm concerned, though, as you start the implementation and you give us the cost for the scenarios, that's the cost for just the 1 year of making the adjustment. Do we have any way of knowing what the 3-year, 5-year, 10-year cost of implementation on these scenarios would be?
That was not a forecast that we ran. If you kind of had an idea on what, you know, future COLAs might look like or increases, we could probably help you figure that out, but we didn't run anything beyond the 1-year implementation.
Thank you.
Chair Krizel?
Yeah, just a quick question. I think this is for the executive side or for Ms. Spader. Could you frame how this study is going to be used in the overall creation of the plans? Are we going to verbatim go to one of these three plans and pick that up, or are we going to use it as a tool with other things that we're going to put into the mix?
We're going to be using it as a tool. Like Legislator Maloney said, there's going to be things that we might not agree with and some things that we're going to. It's a tool that we're going to use as part of negotiations and part of management compensation as well.
Senator Nolan?
So that reminds me of a question, which is, I guess, what if we are making changes relative to those around us on certain positions? So it seems to me like there's an iterative process that we want to be have a intelligent, intelligible plan internally, which is what seems like it's mostly presented here. But then there are these considerations of the external factors. And so is it your sense as the consultants that we should do this first and then do that external consideration? And did you provide this because this is what we ask of you or because this is the best first step?
So I'm going to answer what I think you asked. This is the framework that we did for this study is very commonly the same kind of process that most organizations ask for when we do this. And by the way, my team only does class and comp consulting for local governments. So this is, we don't do anything else about this. And it is this study kind of in all places across the country is the most common to look at internal equity with external equity. And it's for reasons like I'll pick on libraries because it's an easy one. The market may not value library positions as much as it should. And so if you think of what that looks like on this regression, you know, the market data is going to be really low on those positions. And then if you consider the job evaluation, a lot of those positions require a master's degree. So that somehow, that in a way almost inflates the score. So you've got positions with really high scores floating out in space over here because the market's not there. So that doesn't mean we think because the market doesn't care about librarians, you don't pay them. You have to have something to balance it because inherently the market does not care. It doesn't care about equality. It doesn't care about fairness. It can even be discriminatory if you don't have something to balance it with. So the market is a very good data point that you do need to keep an eye on in terms of being competitive, but you have to have something to balance it with.
Thank you.
Comptroller Gallagher.
I was pleased to hear you say that you're going to be doing a snapshot of benefits because I'm reviewing the contract and making sure that the deliverables under the contract are coming to us, and it definitely calls for benefits packages, including retirement and health insurance options, as one of the sets of data to be considered. And another item from the contract that I'm just curious about is training of executive staff, legislative financial analysts, and personnel from the comptroller to undertake future updates to the study will be required. So will there be a training period, and when can we expect the review of benefits to be completed? Thank you.
Yes, I'll have to get back with you on the benefits. We've put out as many FOIAs as we can to get the data as quickly as we can to try to make sure we're getting good data for you all, and I know it's as far as today, I was still seeing emails coming in from that. The training piece for us, I mean, it's going to be this framework. So it's going to be us building this in an Excel file for you. And I mentioned this R-squared number on the regression, the 92% correlation. That means that using our job evaluation tool, if you've got a new position or positions change over time, you'll be able to do that job evaluation and it can predict a grade assignment with about 92%. Maybe one grade here, maybe one grade there, but it should be pretty close to internally equitable, externally competitive. And so that's the training document we're going to provide to HR and those who are going to be maintaining this process, as well as a manual for our job evaluation tool so that you can continue using that to evaluate positions and kind of build in where do grades need to fall based on those factors. So it's usually the very last thing once we get beyond all of this.
Anybody else? I'll just add a couple of comments that I said during the working group. First off, the union isn't here, but just so everybody's aware, they do dispute some of these, if not more, of these numbers than they agree with. So they're working on their own study, I guess, to verify some of the numbers. One of my biggest complaints about this is that Baker Tilly will not share the raw data, so we have no way to see behind the scenes, so to speak. It's even more disappointing that I'm hearing now that the insurance, we're foiling that information. I don't know why we weren't foiling all of the salaries from the different municipalities. It just doesn't make any sense to me. This is publicly available information that anybody could foil and get, and for us to say we have insufficient data, I just don't understand it at all. This is an ongoing process. This is the number that we're seeing is the one is for the first year, but on top of that, this is about, I'm estimating about 20% on top of that number for the overtime and benefits and things like that. So just keep that in mind when we see these numbers. They are more than what's listed here in the packet. So, Mr. Hansen.
What is the reason why we are not allowed to see the raw data of
Baker Tilly does not share it.
Did we know that up front?
It's not totally uncommon. I mean, they could show us something, but it's proprietary. They have an algorithm, per se, that they use. That's what they're going to say. And you're going to hear that from most firms in their position to a point. I'm saying they could get something, but it's not unusual.
Listen, I would understand if they didn't give us their algorithm. Actually, I wouldn't even ask for that. I'm asking for what is Sullivan County paying a correction officer? What is Dutchess County?
I realize they're not even, they won't give us
this. They won't even give us that. Any other comments?
A clarification on that. Is that information that is foilable, or would they?
Yes.
So
100% publicly available information. Any person can get
so that. I could understand if they were protecting a source that didn't want to provide information if it were going to be shared. But in this case, this is publicly available information, so we wouldn't have it from this consultant, but we could get it otherwise.
Sure.
But we hired a consultant hoping to have this information.
Correct. All right. Any other discussion? All right. Jada, thank you. Is there any new business? Any old business? Motion to adjourn.
Move.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.